Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, today, in his book, The Healing Power of Hip-Hop, Intersections of Race, Ethnicity, and Culture, our guest offers a passionate look into existing tensions aligned with hip-hop and demonstrates the beneficial quality it can have, empowering its audience. Dr. Rafael Travis Jr. is an associate professor of social work at Texas State University in San Marcos. His other published works include the articles Rap Music and the Empowerment of Today's Youth, Evidence of Everyday Music Listening, Music Therapy and Commercial Rap Music, Empowerment-Based Positive Youth Development, A New Understanding of Healthy Development for African-American Youth, and Ethnic Identity, Self-Esteem, and Variability in Perceptions of Rap Music's Empowering and Yet Risky Influences. Dr. Travis holds a doctorate in public health from the University of California, Los Angeles, and a Master of Social Work degree from the University of Michigan. Dr. Travis, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hello, Alan. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really looking forward to talk with you today.
Well, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on. And when I was talking with my producer, Jan, and we were going over a variety of topics that we want to touch on. And when this one came up, it was one that we looked at and said, you know, this is something that I think we really need to get this information out, because there are some perceptions out there that people have assumed that really aren't correct. And any time that we can make a difference and that we can educate people to realize that maybe something that's out there that's been perceived one way isn't necessarily accurate, I feel that it's a great thing to bring to people, almost like a duty to bring to people, so that they understand that that there are other ways of looking at things.
Well, I definitely appreciate that, and that's a major reason that I wrote the book, is to help move this a little bit more into the public consciousness around understanding, you know, both hip hop as a culture, but really introducing the world to many of the ambassadors across professions that are using hip hop in really powerful ways to help young people learn and grow.
Now, I had a chance to not only go through the book, but also to learn a little bit about you. And I guess one of the questions would be, you know, when did you realize that you wanted to dedicate yourself to really making a positive difference in society?
Well, that was an early piece for me, since my earliest undergraduate years, when, you know, kind of given that choice, kind of what's next, I really wanted to really invest in young people that faced a similar situation as me growing up. You know, maybe there's some challenges and people just need a little bit of support and opportunity and a little bit of investment. And I think it could go a long way. So since my earliest years in college, I knew I wanted to make a difference in the lives of young people. And the question of how, I think that unfolded a little bit more slowly as the years kind of moved on.
Well, and that was going to be my next question, is that, you know, I'm really thankful of anybody that makes that decision and says, okay, I'm going to make a positive difference in the lives of others. But when did you realize that you would be able to do that, not only through kids, but through educating people about the power of hip-hop and the power of music?
Well, the biggest thing, and you know, I think it's important to clarify, you know, the thrust of my work is around the idea of positive youth development. And essentially what that is, you know, for a lot of professionals, the idea of working with youth is out of the motive of preventing the bad stuff from happening. So violence prevention, substance use prevention, you know, the risky sexual behaviors, those are the things that people are sort of naturally geared towards, this fixing of problems. And early on, I realized that wasn't what I was most excited about. And I was much more excited about promoting the good things that we want to see in young people. And that's what positive youth development is about. And so I spend a lot of time really trying to articulate and define, you know, what are those good things that we want to see? And so the approach that I take, empowerment-based positive youth development, really looks at how these positive aspects of young people reinforce each other. So we know that when they're more connected in the classroom, that they're more confident and they're more likely to invest you know, in their academic future. We know when they're part of supportive communities that reinforces, you know, the development of competence and skills and caring and all the things that we want to see. And so early on, I realized that I was much more, I gravitated much more to the investment in the positive things we want to see in young people. And social work as a profession really allowed that to you know, flourish for me and allow me to really pour my heart into that investment in young people. And so, as you mentioned earlier, I was at UCLA in the public health program. And so at the doctoral level, that's what you get to do. You get to really look in depth at certain areas. And so I spent time looking at youth programs that were, you know, aimed to promote youth development, but as important, also looked at investing in community change. So, mm-hmm. So it was just as much about building up young people as it was investing in the communities that help reinforce all those good things that we want to see. So I spent time with the Community Coalition and their youth organization, South Central Youth Empowered for Action. Spent time with the Youth Justice Coalition. Spent time with JUICE, which is a hip-hop-based youth development program. Justice United in Creative Energy. I spent time at those organizations that as much invested in the youth as they did in trying to think about what are the communities that they're a part of and how can we also help improve communities. And so real quick, the last part of the question was, you know, how did I get into educating the public about hip hop? And that in a way was born out of frustration, I guess is the easiest way to say it. You know, when looking at a lot of the research around hip hop, whether it's in education or mental health or after school or summer programs, any structured kind of empirical work around hip hop tended to fall into two camps. It tended to fall in the camp of, you know, how is exposure to either rap music or some element of hip hop culture risky or promoting of risky attitudes and behaviors? The second camp tended to be, you know, sort of an overly romantic view of, you know, integrating hip hop and basically, you know, hip hop is great and it's going to save the planet. Now, while I do believe in many ways that there significant reasons why we need to invest in it, and that's what the book is about, I wanted to formally enter into kind of the academic discussion by saying, how is hip-hop helpful and how is hip-hop harmful? So, you know, so it's less of a global assessment of what it is, and it's more of really talking to people and trying to find out in what ways is this helpful for you, and in what ways might it also be risky? So allowing for the simultaneous presence of both empowerment and risk. And I really wanted to be able to spell it out and do it in a research-based way. You know, the second right. challenge around hip hop in the research is that much of it tended to be qualitative, and what that means is, mostly narrative-based. Extended kind of discussion of different perspectives, but no real numbers behind it. And not saying that research is invalid, but it tends to only reach a certain audience, right?
Right.
And I wanted to be able to present some research that spoke or resonated with a different audience, and the audience where, numbers are power and numbers kind of speak to people in a different kind of way. So those were my two main reasons for entering into the formal research academic based discussion around hip hop is, how is it helpful and potentially harmful at the same time? And how can we bring some numbers to kind of quantify some of these things in a different type of way?
Well, my first thought is I love the fact that you approach this from the standpoint of gaining data and looking at things from different views, trying to look at both sides. I'm frustrated oftentimes when you get statistics thrown at you via the mainstream media that is really obvious that it's slanted because they only provide you one half of it, and it's very frustrating. So. And then what happens to me is that the people who are of the belief system of that other half that didn't get approached, they then ignore the positive side or the statistics that someone is providing because of the fact that they know that the other side exists, but now it doesn't have as much impact because they feel that it's slanted or that it's somehow skewed for a reason in one way. And that was one of the things when I was going through the book and seeing that it's very open. It's approaching things and saying, look, I'm providing you with the information that's out there. We recognize that it has both of these aspects to it. How can we focus on now bringing out more of that positive rather than what oftentimes, mainstream media, that if it bleeds, it leads, wants to only focus on that negative side.
Yeah, and I appreciate that nuance and perspective because it casts such a shadow and stigma on, what has been shown to be so, so valuable for so many people. And unfortunately, as you point out, it gets lost in the shuffle when the high risk stuff just sort of jumps out at you so profoundly.
Right. In fact, I had on as a guest John Leslie Brown, who his hip hop name is High Hopes, and all of his songs have a very positive message, or at least the songs that I'm aware of have a really positive message. Even if it points out something that's negative, it brings it to how you can shift that mindset into something positive. And I love the fact that you're pointing out so many of these things are the positive things, because I would like to see more people, and especially more kids, go out and listen to his music and take some of those things that they may envision as positive that has a solution or that not maybe even if it's not a solution, but has another view of how you can get yourself out of a situation and turn it into a positive. So that's kind of how I'm looking at this. And that's why I feel that the book is such a powerful book and something that everybody should really read and understand.
I appreciate that. And one of the things that I try to do in that vein is even around how we talk about the content. And I try to introduce people to the idea of empowering and risky, even as opposed to positive and negative, because, something can be both empowering and risky at the same time. Mm-hmm. The most common example I give is coping with adversity. It's one of the major themes that I talk about around resilience. That pathway to resilience for many you know, their approach to coping and getting through a situation can be empowering, but it can also be very high risk, right? You know, so
yep.
A person can want to defend themselves because they don't want to be victimized anymore, right? They don't want to have to deal with the psychological and physical, stress and safety issues that go on. And so, you know, they figure out different ways to protect themselves and keep themselves safe. But many of those can be very, very high risk activities. But it still is empowering in the moment because they're safe. They're no longer being victimized and they can approach whatever situation they're in from a different space. And we have many people that turn to drug sales as a way of dealing with the adversity of poverty and you know, what's going on, both as an individual family. But those are very high-risk activities that, you know, in the moment. And so I try to introduce people to that juxtaposition of empowering and risky at the same time. And that goes with the narrative that are in the music as well. So it's just something that I like to throw out there.
And I appreciate it. And we have an email question coming in. And again, I thank everybody that takes the time to do that. I know many of you are at work at this time, so either to send it in ahead of time like some do or to shoot it right in now, we appreciate it. But I think this goes right to what we were just talking about. And this one says, as a white female therapist who is over 40, I don't profess to know a lot about the hip-hop culture. I am of the belief that hip-hop has had a more positive effect on our culture than rap. Do you agree with this belief? And if so, what can we do to steer rap in a more positive direction?
Well, I think there are a number of kind of embedded questions in there. And I'll start with the one that I think is most, the last point. How can we steer the music in a more positive direction? There are two big things related to that question. One is the assumption that something needs to be more positive. There's more, I'll use this word switch. There's more empowering hip hop available now than at any point in time. It dwarfs anything that, you know, we can sort of point to in the past, and we tend to over romanticize the past. It dwarfs whatever you consider sort of a high point in hip hop in terms of its empowering aspects. What's available now is just exponentially more because of the various outlets. Technology allows much more outlets to access the music. We're four decades into hip-hop as a culture. So generationally, the people, you know, you can go into any classroom in any school in any place in the United States, and you'll probably have, you know, 5 to 10 youth that are extremely gifted and talented artistically in terms of their MC skills. And you'll probably also have a handful that are excellent in terms of their production skills or the ability to make beats. So that's the first part. So there's no need to make hip hop more empowering or quote unquote positive. But that leads into the second part. And I think what many people are running up and against, and I think is probably the underlying piece from the person that's asking this question, and they can write back in and clarify if it's not, is that what we have access to in the mainstream is markedly different than what was before. And we had a huge consolidation in major record labels, which are now entertainment groups. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, at any point in the past, you had 6 or 7 major record labels that, you know, then they had their smaller labels that distributed content as well. But now we have 3. And so we have a much narrower door presenting music into the mainstream. And the research is clear that mainstream content of hip-hop has changed over time. We have several different researchers that's kind of what they specialize in, is looking at change in content over time. So we have violence, the glorification of substance use, misogyny, you know, alcohol representation, all those things have increased over time, and the research is clear. But again, that's of mainstream content. It has nothing to do with hip-hop as a culture. It has nothing to do with what is available out there. It's just what we tend to see in these mainstream outlets and on the radio and things like that has changed. And that's an issue of, you know, when hip-hop started, it was a subculture, right? If even, you know, major radio stations wouldn't play it. You know, even something that is, you know, is labeled as kind of a black culture or historically has been received and produced and developed very favorably within the black community, even black radio stations frowned upon it. Over time, you know, it's worked its way into the mainstream and has been developed as a product to sell. There's no question about that. Once a company saw that it was something to make profit on, then it, you know, as you talked mm-hmm. about earlier today, you know, it leads. There's a certain consumer attractiveness to things that are risky and edgy and dangerous and hyper-sensationalized. And so that has prevailed, and that has, and so what we see sometimes kind of skews what we think of the overall content. And one example that I like to give is, you know, many of your listeners are probably familiar with Netflix and probably have used and seen. But imagine mm-hmm. if when you subscribe to Netflix, they said, you can have access to our service, but you can only search in the action adventure category, right? And so over time, that would give you a very limited view of what's available. It would give you the illusion that you had choice and option, but you'd be in a very, very narrow band of the overall content available for Netflix. And that's the same thing with hip hop. And you know, for those of us that have grown up in generationally and have, it's been a part of our kind of normative cultural development over time. You know, we have the ability to search, and we know the artists, and we know, you know, where to access more empowering content. And we look for certain things that will help. And that's a big part of what I try to introduce, you know, listeners to, is to look for kind of these five dominant narratives around esteem, resilience, growth, community, and change. And that helps. It helps a lot in raising awareness around, you know, what is possible with the content.
Yeah, and when you mentioned about the fact that there was a time in which radio stations wouldn't play hip hop, well, you know, if for anybody that's old enough or has studied it, there was a time in which they wouldn't play rock and roll either. So,
yeah, I was talking to a gentleman the other day, and he was explaining the similar path of even country music as well, mm-hmm. where the content has changed, the nature of you know what it looks like has changed as it's become, you know, as it became commercialized over time. So I think there are a lot of parallels.
Yeah. Now, in regards to and going back to the book itself, and a lot of the research that you've put together, one of the things that anybody who listens to this show knows that I love, you know, I love success stories. And so, what are some of the actual examples, you know, of its practice and how it's been applied and shown the value? You know, the value of what it is. Where, because again, I think we've got a lot of people listening that, you know, if they're busy raising their teenagers, and so they hear something that they don't really know, or they hear something and it's the, you know, some of the songs that have a negative twist to it. And then I hear from the parents, or the professionals out there hear from the parents, you know, we've got to do something because my child's listening to this stuff and it's talking about violence, or it's talking about drug use in a positive way. So just share with everybody some of the examples. And I love the fact that you said that if people searched, it's out there. It may not be getting as much publicity, but it is out there. So share with us some of those positive stories.
Well, I'll start off with something with one of the guests in my book that I interview, and you know, that was one of the big pieces, is trying to give people the voices of actual users of the culture. And I'll start off with one, and for a particular reason, is because it's actually been in the press over the last couple of months, and there's been some publicity around his work. But Ian Levy, who is an artist, you know, he's an MC himself, but he's also a high school counselor. And a couple of things interesting related to that. You know, in our conversation, we happened to be talking the weekend after the Walter Scott shooting in South Carolina. And in our discussion, you know, it was a weekend, so school hadn't been in session. And, you know, out of our conversation, and what he does is just a quick kind of recap. There are two sides of how we think about integrating hip hop. So one is on a creation side, and one is on an analysis or kind of engaging of pre-existing material. And Ian does both, but he concentrates on the creation side. And so what he does is he gives youth a platform to express themselves. He has a built-in studio in his office. And so, you know, for some, the traditional role of a counselor is to have young people come in and, they, you know, you ask them some questions and they talk through, and it's kind of the traditional talk therapy approach. And, you know, one of the innovative things that Ian Levy has done is he's allowed students the opportunity to use their art as the expressive tool to, you know, to work through kind of what's going on. And what he said to me during the interview is, you know, because we were reflecting on how difficult the situation it was, we had this kind of national conversation around, you know, race relations and the relationship with the law enforcement. And he said, the one thing that gives me hope is that I'm 100% confident that these students that I work with have the tools to process through this difficult event. Even if, you know, parents aren't necessarily able to help them process through it in the right way, is that he has normalized the process of expressing oneself and dealing with adversity, and knows that these students are comfortable and have the tools and will know how to work through these challenging situations. And it's such a powerful thing. And so anyway, it's received a lot of attention in the national press. So if you Google, you know, Ian Levy, Bronx High School, you'll see the evidence of his work actually in practice, and the young people talking about how much of a difference it makes in their lives. And, you know, and so this follows in a long line of people providing evidence. You know, at first, we've kind of gone through, you know, kind of a process to get to this point. You know, at first, a lot of the early researchers were simply making the case that, you know, hip hop is a culture and there are some potential benefits. And then we moved into the specific professionals like Edgar Tyson and Elegant and the people that said, you know, this actually might have a unique benefit in a therapeutic or mental health role. At the same time, we also had people in education, right, talking about more culturally nuanced pedagogy. So it wasn't as much about the mental health aspects per se, but it was about how can we engage youth in their efforts to learn in a different type of way that is more culturally specific. Now we've moved to the point where we have social work, we have counselors, we have psychologists, and even now we have a movement of psychiatrists in the UK that are looking specifically within psychiatry. But what I try to talk about is just overall mental health, right? And that right. Across these different professions, we see that hip hop is more favored as a way to actually engage, just simply getting people interested as opposed to more traditional talk therapy approach. And so from an engagement standpoint, and that's true for mental health and as well as the classroom, simply engaging people, getting people to plug in and be alert and be, you know, totally focused on the task at hand, it's shown to be beneficial.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and I completely agree. And whenever I've dealt in situations where, I'm talking to people with school boards or whatever, and they're talking about cutting funding, and they talk about, they always go straight to the arts, and they talk about, you know, that they're cutting various arts, they're cutting music, and I try to share with them to the best of my ability that they need to look at the fact of how damaging that's going to be further down the line. You know, the effects that it has from a mental health standpoint, that by having the arts, by having that outlet, and having a variety of ways in which they can express themselves, you know, is going to benefit them further down the line, and not just the person who's actually in that class, but us as a society, because now they are seeing something that they can relate to, that they understand, and that it makes them feel good about themselves. And the value of that is immeasurable. So yes, I couldn't agree more, and am really happy that there are more people out there kind of projecting that same thing about how valuable this is. Now, I'm getting something from my engineer now that we need to take a break. We're going to take a break. Again, for everybody out there, we are talking with Dr. Rafael Travis Jr. Rafael, if they want to follow along, is the website flowstory.org? Would that be?
Yes.
Okay, so again, that's flowstory, that's flowstory.org. If you want to open up another window, you want to follow along, but stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are talking today with Dr. Rafael Travis Jr., and his book is The Healing Power of Hip Hop: Intersections of Race, Ethnicity, and Culture. So, Dr. Travis?
Excuse me. Yes.
So we were just talking a little bit about really getting schools, getting people out there to understand some of the true values that may not be getting as much publicity.
Yeah, and I think your latter point is really important. You know, in the book, I also talk about the underlying youth development model that I operate from, and you know, that connection between the connection in the classroom, that relationship between teacher and student, and the idea of valuing their knowledge and culture and interests, it's critically important. You know, one of the things that the research also shows is that, you know, when young people feel that, you know, they are not valued, that there are low expectations, that there's inequity in terms of how discipline and things like that are handed out, that it creates a huge disconnect with the classroom and the school experience. And that has nothing to do with academic potential. And, you know, that's what explains a lot of the differences in school engagement and school outcomes. And I think the more that we're able to tap into the things that strengthen and reinforce that the teacher-student relationship, it speaks volumes, you know, that, because those things are connected directly to confidence. Those things are connected directly to, you know, sense of competencies and academic engagement. And the sense of community that is reinforced, whether it's at the classroom level or at the school level, that only enhances everything. And, you know, so there's this mastery network of reinforcing, you know, qualities that's critically important. And I think it gets underscored when we focus so much on just this idea of academic potential and skill.
Yeah, we have another question that's coming in online, and this one reads, while working on a project with inner city teens in San Francisco a few years ago, I assisted with the scheduling of after school hip hop workshops. Dozens of youth attended, and it was amazing how talented and creative these kids were when given the opportunity to express themselves in these musical and dance forums. I look forward to reading your book and learning more about your research.
That's such a powerful testimonial that your guest just, you know, and so much. We have no idea of how talented and incredibly gifted our young people are when we only measure one type of success, and when we have in our purview what we consider, you know, successful outcomes, and when we have the opportunity to step back and not only look for different types of strengths and skills and assets, but then provide the actual opportunities and pathways for those to, you know, to be nurtured and strengthened and reinforced, you know, and really our future is so much brighter. And that's really what I wanted to help people understand is that, you know, hip-hop is really a fuel for life for so many people. And it's renewable. It's a renewable resource. It's something that, you know, we constantly have new content. And, you know, you can create your own content as well. That never ends as well. And it's such a gift for learning and growth. And, you know, we're four decades in, so it's not like, you know, this is a cool and fun, interesting thing. What sets the, you know, I call them cultural ambassadors, what sets these professionals apart from others is that, you know, we've experienced this. We've experienced mm-hmm. it personally in our own lives. We've seen how the culture can be a pathway to learning and a pathway to growth. And we see it in the professional and how it works with the young people we work with. And then the third factor now, which people didn't have before, is that the research is there. The mm-hmm. research shows that this is something that we need to tap into and invest in and really appreciate, because it gives us so many points of leverage, right? You know, right. Leveraging in terms of how we invest in the resources we have available to us. How can we best do that? And so, you know, I really appreciate that comment from your guest about the experiences in San Francisco. It's such a great example of how powerful it can be.
Well, and I think it touches on another issue also. This one refers to an after-school workshop, and I think that we've got multiple areas. One is to just you know, continue to maintain the music programs that are within the school. So maintain that is part of the classroom experience and allow it to expand out to different types of music. But the other part, you know, the after school function, and coming from that time, I think I was the first generation of what was considered the latchkey kid, which was, you know, when both parents are working, where are we going after school? Are we going to do something positive, or as teenagers, are we going to get into some mischief? And I think by setting up and having scheduled after school programs that people want to do, that young people want to do, I think that has another incredibly positive effect on us as a society. And I think it's important that we get our politicians to understand that when they're talking about funding various programs and you know, okay, well, we're going to cut all the after-school programs. Okay, well, before you do that, where do you think the kids are going to go? Both parents are now having to work to make a living. Follow me?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that point up. And there are several key issues in there. And that's one of the reasons I set it aside as its own section. You know, so we talk about teaching, we talk about mental health, and then we talk specifically about after school and summer programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because it is its own domain, and there's so much competition because people are so worried about these academic outcomes that schools are measured against, that it creates this tension right between the school day and after school. And a lot of times there are these cuts after school out of that pressure to, you know, maximize our dollars and show it in these certain specific outcomes that we've deemed most important. But there's a lot of freedom in the after-school settings, and that has been the primary vehicle for these ideas of positive youth development. You know, social-emotional learning has now made its way into the class, into the school day, but before it wasn't. And, you know, and now we're at the point, which is great, again, another benefit of the research, where these ideas of positive youth development, you know, they used to get a kind of a bad rap before. It's kind of these fluffy topics that were hard to operationalize or hard to measure, you know, in really quantitative ways. But we're way past that now, and we mm-hmm. see the benefits. And so it's really important so that it moves even beyond, you know, where do kids go in these after-school settings, to recognizing that there's a quality in how those spaces occur, and we want to maximize the quality of those after-school spaces. So it's not just the quantity, but it's the quality of those spaces. And again, we have a lot of support and research that helps give us direction in how to use those times. And so, you know, I'm glad that you emphasize that, because that is a major feature as well.
Well, we have another comment coming in, and this one reads, as a media producer who loves hip-hop, I observed for a long time how mainstream media has painted it negatively. It is wonderful to see that image is being turned around. I was reading an interview with Africa Bambaataa. Excuse me. It says one of the founders of hip-hop, who was describing its creative origins and how former gangbangers are using the media to pull kids from gangs and violence. This is great work, and I applaud all of you for stepping forward to educate the public and steer our youth on a better life path. And it's from Mr. Jones in Los Angeles.
So glad to hear from Mr. Jones. Thank you for your comment and perspective. And he brings up a great point, and that, you know, if you just think of culture, right, just the idea of culture, and Africa Bambaataa was the individual, the most prominent person in terms of identifying hip-hop as a culture. He said, okay, you know, all of you that like dancing and b-boy and, you know, let's come together. All of you that like graffiti and art, let's come together. So the MCs out there, the DJs, let's all come together in the name of peace. Right, that was the impetus for bringing all those arts together, you know, as well as the value of knowledge of self and you know, under the guise of peace. And so there was it was at a time where there was a lot of gang violence, and he said, "No, let's do something different with these interests of ours." And so, you know, since its origin, the whole premise of bringing those forms together under the umbrella of a culture was out of this idea of both self and community improvement. Like that was the cultural origin. And so, you know, this movement to the mainstream, where we have kind of a caricature of what the culture is about, is unfortunate, but the origin of the culture can never be divorced from it, I guess, is the bottom line. And I think that there are many people that are working very hard to preserve those core values of the culture. And I think we have a lot of opportunity available to help people tap back into, you know, that underlying value that's been a part since the culture's origins. So thank you, Mr. Jones. I really appreciate that comment.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate it as well. And Raphael, we've got about 2 minutes left. And what I'd love to have you emphasize a little bit. First of all, I love the fact that you're so focused on emphasizing the positive. And if you can share, what are some of the things that parents, teachers, and other influencers of young people, what they can do to also continue this process, to continue what it is that you're working towards? Because again, it's, you know, if the parents can not only understand it, but if they can, if they can change a little bit about the way in which they handle it, or again, some of the other influencers, some of the teachers, or even as an influencer, some of the larger entertainment influencers, what are some of the things that you would tell them to do to make a positive difference on a bigger scale?
Well, there's a lot of questions in there, but one of the things that I would emphasize, you know, I try not to tell youth what to listen to. And so I encourage parents to you know, just be judicious about what they say. But I always ask youth to ask themselves two questions with whatever media they listen to or watch. You know, what can I learn and how can I grow? And so I emphasize, you know, have parents, you know, kind of emphasize that for the young people in their life, because they're not going to be able to control what young people listen to. But if they can emphasize, have young people ask themselves, that helps them keep them accountable to what's coming in. What can I learn and how can I grow? In terms of the artists, you know, what can they do? I think just be judicious about, you know, what you put out there. We find that there are basically five areas that people use music for: to feel better, to do better, to be better as a person, for a better sense of belonging, and then for better conditions for the communities they're a part of. Those are the narratives that are most consistent. And so, you know, I try to just be aware of the risky attitudes and behaviors that are being promoted within the content. But artists are artists, you know, artists are going to mm-hmm. be artists. But I would, you know, really want to have the powers that be, the decision makers, you know, really provide more platforms for the more empowering content to be out there. But, you know, and we have limited control over that. But have partner with artists. You know, if you're a teacher, bring artists in the classroom. If you're counselors and social worker, bring artists in. So to help people, to help young people see that there are lots of artists in all of our communities that are creating very powerful narratives and empowering narratives, but don't get the exposure sometimes. And so there are a lot of people that are bringing artists into these professional settings, and it's making a huge difference, not only in terms of what content young people can analyze and kind of process, but also giving them permission to be creative themselves and really, you know, exercise that alternative competency and skills that they have that sometimes doesn't come out in the classroom. And so really bringing the idea of artistry as an expressive norm as opposed to just entertainment is very, very helpful.
Raphael, thank you for making a positive difference. Thank you for shining a light on this. And I appreciate you coming on. And again, for everybody out there, if you want to find the book or find more information, go to flowstory.org and you can learn more information. Again, Raphael, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate your show and the platform that you're allowing many people to have. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And again, for everybody out there, tune in next week when our guest will be Henry S. Gornbein, author of Divorce Demystified, Everything You Need to Know Before You File for Divorce. And again, this is important. I mean, as there's so many families that go through this, there are so many things that you can do to keep this from being as traumatic as it can be on your children. And if you missed a show or you want to share our show with your friends or family, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or check us out and subscribe on iTunes, and then iTunes will send it to you directly, and that's at no cost. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. Again, we appreciate all of you out there. Keep spreading the word, and until next week, be good humans, and thank you for listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.